This is Sharon Bornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, and I'm really happy to have my friend and fellow real estate investor, Kelly Payne, with me today. Kelly is from Tulsa, Oklahoma. She has three small children, six and under, which amazes me. And somehow she manages to juggle it all, and she's managing to grow her real estate investing business. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
I'm really excited to talk with you today because I know so many people that have small children think they can't pull this off, and you have certainly managed to do that. So let's start by talking about how long have you been investing now?
I started marketing in 2010, so, you know, a little over 2 years. Oh, well, almost three now. We're at the end of 2012, so yeah.
Well, cool. So how did you happen to get started? Did you read a book or know somebody? How was it you got started?
It's a really funny story, and I love this story, but my husband and I, from the beginning, just didn't really want to stay in corporate America. We wanted more of a free type of lifestyle to spend with the kids and each other. So I was always looking for something that we could do to kind of create financial freedom. But it was my mom, of all people, who just brought this wholesaling course to me that she bought off the TV. And she said, I don't want to do this, but you might want to do this. Mm-hmm. And I devoured it and I loved it. And so I got started because of my mom. And it's just so bizarre. She had never mentioned real estate investing before. She doesn't invest. So it was just this thing she had.
You know, Jeff Kowalczyk has a similar story. His mom introduced him to real estate. I think she did have an interest, but that wasn't what she did. And he said one of the most exciting things for him was turning the age when he could sign a real estate contract. Said most people wanted to go to a bar. He wanted to be able to buy real estate.
So now,
I know you took a little bit of a break when you had your third child. Can't imagine why you would want to do that, but you took a little bit of a break, but you didn't really just quit doing everything, did you?
Well, what I decided was with my third, I really wanted to enjoy that time and not feel pressure to get up and going when I didn't feel like it. So I told myself instead of 6 weeks, I was giving myself a year to adjust, to heal, to just deal with transitions to three children. But so I didn't market. I didn't close any deals, but I was always reading, and I couldn't keep myself off of Zillow and Realtor.com or, you know, or Bigger Pockets. So I was always researching and keeping up to date on things, but I didn't market.
Mm-hmm. But you did continue to learn and you stayed involved. And I think that was probably a big key to you just coming right on, you know, moving forward and being successful. Now, I know that you do some rehabbing. Your plan, though, was to start out wholesaling, was it not? You were going to start out wholesaling. But you quickly found things changed up, and I know you have rental property now. So tell everybody a little bit about how that all transpired.
I only was looking to get involved in real estate. That's the only course I had, you know. But I'm a pretty avid researcher, so especially on Bigger Pockets, I found everything I needed from the internet or asking questions, and as different deals presented themselves, some weren't a good wholesale deal. Either the seller couldn't go that low or didn't want to, or maybe the property just wasn't a good wholesale deal. Mm-hmm. So I had to get creative. I either had to pass or make it into a different kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got the two rental properties that we have now. They just didn't want a cash deal, and so I offered them a couple different options, and they accepted an owner finance deal. Mm-hmm. So I had to keep those. I mean, they were amazing deals. So that's how we ended up with rentals.
You know, it's interesting that you said you had to turn them into something else, because one of my mentors and a good friend of mine told me once that great deals are created. They're not just found. You're presented with an opportunity, and what you are able to do with that opportunity and maybe make it into, maybe like you said, not the deal you thought you were going to have, but maybe a different deal. And he is also a big proponent of presenting multiple offers to people. That is one thing that he teaches, and that is certainly a strategy that has worked for you.
Yes. The first time I heard that was from my friend Shay, your friend Shay, also Shay Bynes. Somewhere I read that she said to always give three different offers. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really been consistently doing that until I started marketing again this year. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I would do that since it seemed to make sense. And once I started doing that, that's when I started closing more deals than I did in 2010 when I marketed. I also got a better response from the sellers. It's sort of this idea of when I presented one offer, it was yes or no. Mm-hmm. But when I presented the multiple offers, it was which offer are they going to take? And that's the way they looked at it. So I really love that. That helped me to come up with different offers that can meet their needs, solve their problems, but it also helped them to be more inclined to say yes to me.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And it would seem to me like you pretty much learned as you went. You didn't start out with the idea that you were going to do an owner finance deal or do a lease option. So your education and the sites that you mentioned, like Bigger Pockets, they had to play an enormous part in how you were able to put all of that together.
Enormous. In fact, if you go on to Bigger Pockets and look at the questions that I've asked, those are all me in the middle of negotiations trying to figure out how I can make this work or what I'm dealing with. And I definitely just flew by the seat of my pants. But I was always upfront with my sellers. If I didn't know something, I said, well, I'll just get back to you. Or So I tried to be upfront, but I tried very hard to come up with answers to my questions right away. And like you said, to kind of try to make it work. I really wanted those deals to be something. So, but it was scary.
Yeah.
It is scary for sure.
You know, if you are just wholesaling, then you have a one exit strategy. If you have, like you kind of ended up in the rehab business too. So if you're open to multiple strategies, then I think you can close more deals than if you are strictly a wholesaler or strictly, like some people I know, they only do buy and hold. Then they don't want big rehabs. And that's okay if that's what you want to do. But you are at a stage in your life where you have allowed yourself to just branch out kind of like a tree almost, and you can pick the pieces and put them where you want them to end up. Now, another thing that I find fascinating is that you are, in the big picture, you are really considered a pretty new investor, but you are investing in two different cities. So how the heck did that happen?
At the end of 2010, my husband's job transferred us from Oklahoma City to Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was going to be for a very short time, and that was 2 years ago, and we're still here in Tulsa. Still here, and I don't know if we'll be saying that in 30 years or not, but when I decided to invest again in January and start marketing, I had to decide if I wanted to get to know Tulsa, which I hadn't really been doing that the year that I was here. I was just relaxing and researching online. So I had to decide if I wanted to learn a new market and get a new network, find new resources, everything, or do it semi-virtually and continue to invest in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. So I decided to invest in Oklahoma City and figure out how I can make that work.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Oklahoma City, was that your hometown?
Well, that's where my husband and I, we met at OU and got married. So we grew our family there, and we consider it home. So that's where, and we still call it home. So we'll see if we end up there or not, though. But it was a tough decision for me anyway, because I had never considered virtual wholesaling before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you told me it's about an hour away from where you are now.
It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on how far south of Oklahoma City you go. But so I knew that if I had to, I could hop on the highway and get there if I needed to take care of an issue.
Right.
So it, for me, it's sort of a pseudo virtual wholesaling because I have that comfort level of distance that's not too far.
Well, I think that's an important point to note. Somewhere around that 2 hour mark is where it seems that you can manage the virtual wholesaling, and but you still feel like you're kind of at home. And you have the added advantage of knowing that area. Whereas if you were to say, I'm living in Tulsa, but I'm going to invest in Louisville, Kentucky, then if you didn't know anything about that city, to me, that is just a really tough chore to pull off successfully.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's not something I ever considered. So I'm really glad that I know Oklahoma City so well. And I have lots of people there that help me actually and that I've already created those relationships and I use those that I've already created.
Now that's probably the best setup you could ever wish for as far as, investing virtually. Now you have closed 4 deals this year. Is that correct?
Yes, 4 deals so far.
Okay. Now you told me before that a couple of them actually ended up being in your city as a result of your marketing to Oklahoma City. So how did that happen?
I say it's so bizarre. Actually, it's the 2 rentals that we bought this year. Both of them got my marketing for houses that they own in Oklahoma City. And they called me up and they said, well, we are interested in selling those, but what we really want to sell is this house I have in Tulsa. Yeah. And they didn't even know I was in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And they both happened to really like my owner finance option and accepted it. And both of them were in really good cash flow neighborhoods. So we just kept both of them. The owner finance terms were very favorable and they're good rentals, so we're just keeping them. But I had never considered the idea that I would pick up Tulsa properties from my Oklahoma City marketing, but I'm sure glad I did.
You know, that's something to maybe work into your letter or your marketing piece somehow, because that seems to be working very well for you, kind of on an accidental basis.
Right. And so I was just thinking about how I'm going to be changing my marketing up a little bit. And I thought, well, I wonder how many other people have properties in Tulsa and Oklahoma City or the surrounding areas. So I'm going to have to include that wording to capture those as well, because they just happen to really need to sell these Tulsa properties. So I might really be able to capture people that are motivated in both cities.
I think you may be onto something there. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about how you find your deals and about the type of marketing that you do. So if you want to tell me about that a little bit.
Well, in 2010, when I started, I did almost exclusively probates. I did dabble in evictions, and I did a marketing campaign for tax delinquent properties. I did that. I closed on one of the houses I closed on was from that. But I mostly focused on probates, and I sent professional white letters to these estates. And then when I started marketing again in 2012, I decided to do absentee owners and probates, mostly from reading your blog. I had to decide, you know, what I was going to focus on, and I had been reading your blog all of 2011 while I was, you know, hanging out with Maddie, my baby. And so I decided, well, that's what I'm going to go for. I had good experience with probates, and I wanted to get into absentee owners. So I tried one yellow letter campaign, and I wrote about on my blog why I decided to get away from that. And so for the last several months, I've been sending professional white letters to both probates and absentee owners.
Yeah, I've read your blog post, and it is, I know people that swear by yellow letters, but for me, I got lots of calls, which I know was your case, but I did not get a lot of motivated sellers because the letter was simply too vague.
And right.
Like you, I don't need 100 phone calls. I need less phone calls, but I need somebody that's going to be motivated to sell.
Right. That's how I felt too.
Yeah, have you thought about trying postcards? for absentee owners?
Yes, actually, I've already set up. That's why I told you a few minutes ago that I'm switching up my marketing. Mm-hmm. I love my white letters. I love the response rates I get, mm-hmm. but that I'm still very targeted in my audience. Mm-hmm. But they're very high maintenance to send out. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. If I don't do them, and they're very time consuming if I do them. Mm-hmm. So I have set up an account with Postcard Mania mm-hmm. based on your recommendation. Mm-hmm. And so far they've been fantastic. And, so I'm going to try that out and just tweak it the next several months, probably at least 6 months and see how that goes, because it's a lot more automated. But it's very professional looking, so we'll mm-hmm. see, and I'll compare mm-hmm. response rates and those sorts of things to see mm-hmm. if I still like it.
Yeah, I love the company Postcard Mania, and I've sent out a couple of mailings through them, and I'm still at that. I'm like you. I'm still trying to find the perfect mix or the perfect piece, and so I had decided back a few months ago when I started using them that I wanted to. First of all, I'm like you. I need to get rid of the labor end of it. I like white letters, and I've always had a great response, and I still use those for my probates. But the, gosh, they're just so labor intensive any way you look at them. And mm-hmm. we need to be working on our business, not in our business. So mm-hmm. that was one of my big things, big reasons that I decided to use them for absentee owners. And it's important to note too that if you work on pre-foreclosures or any niche, with the exception of probates, which I do not think you should ever send postcards to, I think you can use postcard marketing for any other niche. I think you can get the perfect postcard for whatever niche you are working in. Mm-hmm. Do you find that, I know you're like me, you work probates and absentee owners. Do you find that it's difficult to find buyers if you actually, when you do try to wholesale a deal, do you have a problem finding buyers, or do you have a buyer's list?
I have never had a problem selling my properties. Someone told me once, and I don't know who it was at the very beginning of all this, that mm-hmm. if you focus on finding a fantastic deal, mm-hmm. they will flock to you. You will not have mm-hmm. a problem selling mm-hmm. that deal. And that's been my experience. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, when I started, I was terrified of getting a mm-hmm. deal, because then you have to, mm-hmm. you know, find a buyer. Mm-hmm. So I did have a buyer's list. I used the people in my RIA group. Mm-hmm. I scoured Craigslist looking for buyers, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. So I had that comfort of knowing that I had it. I think I had maybe 10 or 15 people mm-hmm. on my buyer's list. But I don't usually sell to people on my buyer's list. I usually sell it to someone that finds it on Craigslist or Zillow.
Is that right? That's interesting. I've had mixed results with Craigslist. I have gotten calls up from Zillow through creating the postlets, the flyers there, because it just automatically mm-hmm. goes out to Zillow. But I've had I'm fortunate in that I have some solid cash buyers on my list, but most all of those came from RIA, my RIA group. Although I did put a property on Bigger Pockets one time, this was interesting, and someone in my city called about that property, and that person
really
became a good cash buyer. And, you know, people think of cash buyers as always being cash, but you and I know they're not always cash. And this particular person mm-hmm. had retired kind of young, actually, but he had a great big old line of credit on his house. So he would buy a property, use his line of credit, and as soon as he got it rehabbed, if he was going to keep it, he would refinance it, or if he was going to sell it, which was what he usually did, then he just put the money back, and he just recycled that same cash over and over again. Mm-hmm. So if you can find somebody like that, mm-hmm. they make great cash buyers, too. I guess one last thing I wanted to ask you. You've had such great success this past year for sure. Do you have a big picture for your business, where you would like to see your business go?
That's such a good question, and it's something I'm always thinking about, trying to figure out. You know, we got started because I wanted to be able to provide something for my family, a certain kind of lifestyle, not necessarily wealthy, but time wealthy, you know, the ability to do that. So our main goal with all of this is to make my husband's job optional. And so that's our first goal. And so long term, wholesaling is definitely our main focus in order to do that. You know, and the more I think about where I want it to go, rentals are definitely part of our long term plan, which is why we kept those two. But I know that I want wholesaling to be there long term. So because of that and because of my lifestyle goals, I've been really trying to think about how, like you said, to only be working on my business and not in it. I really want to be able to step out of it. So I've been kind of obsessed with Tim Ferriss lately, the 4-hour work week, and how there, you know, there aren't a lot of people that talk about how you can apply those principles to real estate investing. But having to invest in Oklahoma City has, I've had to do some of those techniques. And anyway, so that's what I really feel like I'm going to have to try to figure out in the next year is how can I make this a successful business that continues to provide for us, but that is definitely more automated than what I'm doing right now.
And I have one tip for you with your white letters. It's something that has worked very well for me this year. I found a gal who was a graduate student who also was lifeguarding at one of my daughter's properties. And she earns roughly $8 an hour less taxes. So I said to her, would you be interested in doing my direct mail, my white letters, fold them, put them in the envelope and hand address them? And she said, absolutely. So I said, what I would like to do, because people work at different speeds, and I knew that when I'm flying through my letters, I could do 120 an hour. That's what I knew I could do in front of the TV. So I said to her, Becky, how would you feel like it was fair if I paid you $10 per 100? That would mean she wouldn't have to fly like I did, but she would still, it would still be, you could still get 100 done easily in an hour. And she said, absolutely. So I found someone that was, she's very reliable. You know, she's an intelligent person and she does that for me. And if I have, let's say I have a group of 800 letters, it's $80. $80.
That's really good.
And for her, you know, I 1099 her and she doesn't have any taxes taken out and it's cash while she, and even she lifeguards in the winter and there's rarely anybody at this indoor pool. So she can actually do my work with her boss's permission while she sits there and sees if anybody's going to show up at the pool. So she's taken her income from $8 an hour to $18 an hour. And it's, she does a great job. It's taken it all off of me. Now, what I do is I get the letters back and I put the stamps on the letters. That way, you know, it's kind of a safeguard for everybody and I can see that they are indeed all getting done. And I provide her with a sheet and a list of the counts and I tell her, you know, maybe make sure the computer counted right because I print them off in months. But she's turned out to be my outsourcing person for all of my white letters. So you might try to look for somebody like that. Take that off of you. Well, I thank you so much, Kelly, for doing this interview. And I know people are going to really love it. I've already had several people ask me, where's Kelly's interview on Facebook and things, because I had put on there that you know, we're doing the interview and when's it going to be ready? Because I think other people want to see just how the heck is she doing this. So thank you so much for doing the interview. And I will put the link to Kelly's blog, Flipping Oklahoma, which it has a longer address, but I will put that as a link below the video so that you all can check out her blog because she has a lot of great information to share with you, whether you're new or an experienced investor. So thanks, Kelly, and I will talk with you soon.
Thanks, Sharon.